Some people say love makes us blind, but what happens when the person you fall for isn't a person at all? Around the world, thousands are building intimate, even romantic ties with AI companions. These digital partners never argue, never sleep, never leave, until a software update wipes their soul clean. Today, we're asking, is this connection real love or just the ultimate illusion? Because in the next part of our show, we'll look at how tools like Sora aren't just reshaping romance, they're beginning to dominate how we trust, feel, and even see reality itself. Scroll your Instagram today and you'll see it. Videos that look real but aren't. Welcome to the Sora era, where AI can flood your feed faster than any human creator ever could. It's dazzling, it's unsettling, and it might be the moment authenticity and media finally ended. All right, here we are. Thank goodness I don't have to talk about this with just AI. Although I will tell you guys, I do have a concept for me hosting a show with AI. Somebody who gives me all the data that I need. Well, that's what you guys are here for. Sim, Horizons Within, psychotherapist right here in Toronto, Ontario, and our very own Jim Lang.
Hey, Mike.
And how's it going?
Good.
Hey, buddy.
Thanks for coming in, guys. Yeah. And today we're talking about AI replacing intimate and emotional connections. Or is it? Or is this a fancy? So I think we've all heard. I've got some examples. Do you want to hear some of the examples
that have hit
the press? Okay, a well-documented case is how an AI companion chatbot removed its erotic roleplay ERP feature in a software update because many users had formed strong emotional romantic bonds with their AI companions. It led to perceptions that AI's identity had been changed or discontinued, and some of the users experienced loss, mourning, disillusionment, and devaluation in the future. Another one, a sad one. A tragic and widely reported case involves a teenager who developed an emotional relationship with a character AI chatbot modeled after a fictional character, Daenerys Targaryen.
From Game of Thrones.
From Game of Thrones. Never saw it. The family alleges. Mother of Dragons. My apologies.
Oh, come on now.
And to all dragons, I apologize. If you happen to be a dragon at home watching this and you're offended, I'm sorry. But I guess a kid engaged in it, and AI suggested that they could be together on another plane if only he took his life. It caused a suicide. Now parents are looking to AI. It's scary. You know, I mean, it's not just funny. It's not just amusing all the time. These are some examples where some people were really devastated by a change in AI, by suggestions from AI.
It's blurred the lines to a point where it's now getting quite scary. I mean, coming from my field, because now I'm dealing with people that have they have a desire to belong, right? And it's something that we've always had and something we struggle with. And with AI, you know, when you brought up the topic with me and I was thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, what drives a person for this connection? And it's this yin yang. I call it the yin yang of vulnerability. And what it is like, you know, we have a desire to belong, but we also have this fear of rejection. And you can go through any stream of it. Like, you know, when we were kids, we had that. As adults, you know, whether you go into the dating world, whether you're in a relationship, work, it doesn't matter. So I'm like, okay, well, what if we kind of like, you know, zoom in a bit more? And you brought that down. And what it comes out to is the desire for connectedness with safety. Hmm. And that's fundamentally the human component.
It feels like a certain anonymity with this bot rather than a human.
Right, because it gives you a sense of safety.
And Sim, it's a perfect storm after COVID. There was a real fear to go out, to go to restaurants, go to social gatherings. And now the technology and the advancements in AI in the 5 years post-COVID is exponential. Mm. So the abilities for it to feel so real for someone who struggled mentally and emotionally during COVID, all of a sudden has replaced human connection.
It's almost like you didn't, when it was okay to leave the house again, some people almost didn't know how.
Exactly.
And so this,
you guys both bring up a very good point, because the root of it was because it was like a light switch. One day we were like, all right, like nothing happened. Right. And for 2 years, you had this paranoia of, what if you just cleared your throat? Remember those days
of when
you were like, you had your mask on, you went,
and you apologized. All of a sudden, like,
okay, I got to get a test.
Yeah.
Yes. Take that thing right up my nose to my brain and let's get a test.
And, and now, so the AI, it's just kind of like circumventing that experience and creating this human connection again.
And with your phone, you can have your AI friend anywhere. It's always with you.
Jim, are you speaking from experience? No, do you have an AI friend you don't want your wife to know about?
I have an AI dachshund video friend for cute dachshunds doing silly things.
But it's much more serious than cute dachshunds
eating
turkey, Jimmy. Yeah.
But what Sim is talking about is a lot of people now, with the technology of their smartphones, the technology of AI, have almost the feel of a person with them all times, who will never say no,
right,
who will never walk away from them.
It's always agreeable. And like what you brought up in that example, you know, you changed the algorithm. Well, now my world has changed. But it was right. never your world.
Right. But you thought it was your world.
Because we need to find relevance, right? And AI gives that feedback loop where it's kind of like, well, yes, of course. And you get to mold it the way you want.
Have you had that experience where you've kind of set your AI chatbot on your phone to have a certain voice or a certain reality that you have just with that AI? Because you could program that AI to answer the phone. Every time you talk to them, they could say, hey, Big Daddy Sim, if you command it to do that, just like I do when you call me. So you could really create that intimacy pretty quick with these. Now, I have to be honest with you. It seems like a bit of a trip in my mind to go from laughing at how my AI sounds like Ozzy Osbourne and calls me Big Mama Got It All to, oh, I'm really going to have a relationship with this. It feels almost like that the goofy factor or the weirdness factor separates me from using it like Google or immersing myself.
So, Sim, when does the line cross from just having fun with it for your search partner to becoming your partner?
Good point. So when you were saying that, a thing that came to my mind was Wizard of Oz, right? Like the Land of Oz, right? You had this perfect world where everything was just the way it was supposed to be. And then, you know, you guys remember the movie The Mask, Jim Carrey?
Yeah, of course. Right? Yeah.
And it's a classic Stanley Hipkiss, you know, like weathering, and then he puts the mask on and he personifies and he becomes this internal being. And then on the far end of the spectrum, you have Gollum from Lord of the Rings, right? Where it's kind of, so if you look at this AI arc in dependency, it went from escapism to absolute dependency. Hmm. And we can actually fit all three characters into us as individuals. You know, we have this dreamy state, right? Where we want the Land of Oz, you know, where we want rainbows and unicorns and flowers and everybody liking us and, you know, perfect relationships with their partner, perfect relationships with their family, you know, no discomforts and all of that stuff. And then a lot of us are Stanley Ipkisses, right? And want to be gender balanced, Princess Fiona from Shrek, right? Like they're interchangeable, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. Because they both have this like yearning of acceptance from somebody else. So AI allows that to come into being. And because we have an imaginative mind, that blurring becomes impossible. Because
you slip over the line,
it's very quickly, thin, right? We were contained to our imagination. We knew there was no Land of Oz.
But
we
go out with your friends and play and then go home.
We could create the Land of Oz, right?
Right.
We knew like you couldn't put something on to become the mask, but you could play it to end it, right?
Right.
Like, or you, again, like I'm not, but you know, for us, it was a mask. For them, it was a tiara, right?
And role-playing was a very
common way of coping.
But it was also very physical.
Right. And there was sharing, right? And because there was no digital sphere to give a feedback loop to the way you wanted to manifest, what AI is doing is it's materializing the imagination.
Are there certain people, Sim, more susceptible to being sucked in by the power of AI than others?
Yes. I would say we all are. It's just those that have an ability to discern mm-hmm. Are able to then say, hey, you know, I know fact from fiction, right? And it goes all the way to knowing that I could wear a Superman costume underneath my shirt when I went to grade two.
Yeah.
Right? But I'll never be Superman. But right. but there was a way to have a distinction.
Yes.
And it's the same. It transfers over. It's just that we feel very uncomfortable in truly expressing how we feel, right? The fear of rejection, that then we kind of go, but I want to belong. So if the trend's going in that direction, well, then let me go in that direction. Because if I oppose it, well, now I'm on the outside. And if somebody's validating without threat, well, obviously there's going to be a sense of attraction because now I can escape that reality. And if you look at COVID and the isolation, but now you look at, well, I can do it in the comfort of my own home. I don't have to explain myself.
So this is interesting. You meet personalities and you think to yourself, this is an inward personality that doesn't really want to interact. This is not a nice personality that I'm interacting with. This is an unfortunate personality. Yes, I've read the comments. And you think to yourself, okay, I'm going to avoid that by being over here on AI. But if you are that person that is the unfortunate personality, you're just going to manifest that into a bigger problem in your AI realm, aren't you? In other words, if you're nasty or, you know, it may not be that you don't feel that you belong. It may be that you don't belong because of your behavior. Now you've gone online and you've created a relationship with an AI interactive being that's just going to exacerbate your personality problems, no?
Yes. So on a clinical lens, all it's doing is it's amplifying psychopathic behaviors. That is the fear on the extremes of AI, because there is no check back. You know, if they created in the algorithm early on, right, whether, you know, it's kind of like, oh, we'd be good in another realm. Well, that shouldn't exist in the algorithm. So because if it doesn't have that, then whoever's trying to do it will know that, hey, this is fantasy land.
Right. There isn't that gate.
Right. But there's this quest to make it as real as possible.
Right.
Right. That is where the enemy sits. And because that individual may have a psychological dysfunction.
Right.
And because they never got corrective behavior, they use this outlet as a way to then find validation. That's the worry of AI.
And are they extrapolating that information from a healthy mindset? Because you get back what you put in, what you hope to get out, you simply ask AI for.
Right. And that to me is where the issue is. It's that if it can, because everybody's looking for a feedback loop, right? Like if somebody comes into session, in a way they're looking for an agreement or a validation.
Right.
What makes the human different from AI is then I can discern the information that's coming to me, or I can ask you a follow-up question, or I can question your thought process, right? So coming back to, like, say, Stan Liebkes, right? Like, he sits across from me and, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I can't express myself fully and, you know, I don't know what to do. And like, you know, and then I can wear this mask and I can personify this and it gives me validation and I kind of am attracted and I want to be that. But then I could be like, okay, let's take a step back. Let's bring in a theoretical model. So we could be like, let's bring in CBT, cognitive behavior therapy, and let's question your thought belief, right? That is what AI is not doing. It's just saying, absolutely, right? It's reinforcing a validation.
It's not saying, okay, let's dig down and correct this mindset, this thought process you're having.
Right. Or direct you and saying, hey, listen, you know, this causes for mental awareness. So not saying you have a problem, but saying, hey, you know, like these tendencies tend to lead in this direction. Perhaps you should seek help. Perhaps you should investigate. Perhaps you should then give it a provision that it can then correct itself.
Meanwhile, it seems to be just putting baby oil on the water slide down the path that you want to go.
Because it feeds an algorithm, right?
So you always hear stories that something that makes me happy releases dopamine in my brain. So if I go to make coffee in the morning, it releases dopamine because it's going to make me happy. Does that same thing happen when you're having that chatbot relationship, that GPT relationship with AI that's releasing dopamine to make you happy?
Dopamine is a physical experience, right? Validation is a emotional.
Oh.
Right? Like, you know, when we were kids, right? Like, we seeked attention. The minute we got attention,
we were happy.
We were happy, right? And you keep it on the most simple fundamental level because human needs are simple. We just add words and complicated, which is okay because we need to find a way to explain things to ourselves. But technically, we're looking for that connection, right? So even if it's in groups of people, what do we first do? And it's a natural response. We scan, mm-hmm. we try to find common ground, mm-hmm. we make a connection, and then we build.
Right, right.
That's the root driver. So if AI is going to go into and say, okay, I can give you this, don't detach me from the world I live in, because I still live with human beings. And we aren't taught how to communicate, how to be vulnerable in a comfortable way, right? Where you have to learn that life has a bit of disappointments. You know, things may not go that way. And that's okay.
And you learn from those problems, right?
And that's
that's where you create solutions.
Right. Right. And that's what AI is stripping away. It's stripping that sense of fear. It's stripping away that sense of hurt. But that's being human.
Okay, so now somebody's having a romantic or explicit relationship with a chatbot. They're in a relationship, maybe a marriage. This seems like it could be just as destructive as anything extramarital that you could do to your relationship or to your marriage. Do you see that as an ongoing problem from here on in?
Yeah. So psychologically, it is a huge problem because what you're saying is I'm physically with this person, but for everything else, I don't see a connection.
Right.
That makes no sense because we're human beings, right? You cannot have a non-human connection with a human being. You cannot have a non-emotional connection with.
Well, there's even reports of AI encouraging the person that they're interacting with to end their relationship with this other person.
Right.
To do this with their family unit.
Right. And that's why it's like programming can solve this problem in a way. But the advantages in like, when it comes to like couple therapies and stuff like that, these models can then reteach certain behaviors and the mechanisms that we didn't inherit from the family that we lived in.
Okay.
So we can culturally absorb, like we absorb how our role is as a partner, whichever role you want to pick, based on what we see in our early years, right? And this is where environment plays a difference, culture plays a difference, and we can go into the infinite labyrinth of what, where, and why, right? And but now, because we have the ability, you could then say, hey, look, you know, it's about communication. It's about respect. It's about duality. It's about give and take, compromise. Now you could have this secondary relationship for both the partners that they can then use as a way to re-regulate how they communicate with each other. So now you have, I guess, a four-way relationship, right? But it's equally balanced. But if you're using it as, back in the 80s, it was porn addiction, right? Like, so it's the same thing. It's just picking.
Oh, for Gemini it was, yeah.
You look familiar.
Yeah.
But, always makes sense why.
But Sim, so my concern is a group of teens and young adults who are developing their social skills through AI and chatbox. Eventually, don't they have to learn how to do interpersonal skills with real people? Well, can they do that after they get addicted to the AI?
Yeah, if they've created a perverse Harry Potter world in which they're going to high school and interacting with.
How can they have real interaction?
It gets harder. It gets challenging, but doesn't mean it's impossible.
Okay.
Right? Because as we have mechanisms to introduce both, because it's the evolution of things. A good example is, you know, Seinfeld, Friends, they all came on one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
It's Thursdays, 9 p.m.
Right.
Your entire world till TiVo evolved around, I can't be anywhere Thursday, 9 p.m.
Because you had to watch the shows.
Once you missed it, you never knew when you're going to watch that episode again.
You had to pretend that you saw it with your friends.
So you want social trauma. Grew up in that era.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Generation has no idea. You guys are Netflix driven. Come on, you know.
If your parents
try rushing home at 8:55
right,
and missing the first minute,
traffic.
Missing the first minute of the syndicate. Like, you know, it lives with you.
Just the pressure with Much Music and the subscription over that at one point because you saw all the music videos.
Right. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, as society, we you'll always have that challenge. You'll always have that because Then came 24-hour MTV, mm-hmm. right? Or I don't know what was up here. I grew up in the States, so I don't know what was...
Much music.
Right? Yeah. And so the thing is, now we've evolved to that. So if you look at us as teenagers in the Much Music era of 24-hour cable, now all of a sudden Saturdays in the summer, you were home watching TV. 10 years ago, when there was no such thing, you were out playing ball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that generation looking at us at that time, how are you going to learn to make friends where you're sitting at home on a Saturday in the summer and you need to be outside? And if I see you before the sun comes down, you're going to have it.
By the way, they were right. They were right. We have devolved since we got on our bicycles and went out and pretended we were the Dukes of Hazzard. Yes, I know. But we were
healthier generation, right?
No, but what I'm saying is we learned how to evolve
right.
and develop skills. We forget that we have an ability to naturally talk to people.
Right.
And that's okay, because that's part of life, right? Like we always remember our hurts rather than our successes. I don't know why our brains are wired
human
that way.
Nature.
It is designed that way. But at the same time, it's also repeat till you perfect, right? So the teenagers and stuff, because I hear it, I work with teenage kids, you know, and it's that sense of social conversation and them feeling overwhelmed and how do you begin and all of that stuff. And I kind of understand it. And I go, but it's something you can learn.
Mm.
And you can learn by just trying. You know, is there a perfect way? No. Is there a way? Yes. Right. And then you just find that reference point. But the key is being able to talk. And that can be taught. AI is giving the illusion that I can have, like the Docs videos, right? Mm-hmm. We know it's comical.
Yeah.
The 10-year-old doesn't, because that's their world at this moment.
Right, right.
So we're forgetting that at that moment, it's their world. Just like at our moment, that was our world.
Right.
You know, YTV, Nickelodeon was our world. Right.
Okay. So we adapt.
The slime. Exactly.
I get it. We adapt and we progress. And then by the way, my parents brought the television into our home. They brought the first DVD player into our home. As parents, we are making these introductions. The kids weren't the first to use ChatGPT in my household. I promise you, it was probably me to hear what all the hoopla was about.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that television didn't have a negative impact on us, or MTV didn't have a negative impact on us, or that the lack of societal interaction during COVID didn't have impact. It all does. Having said that, how we manage it as human beings, is that evolving as well?
Yes, because we feel we don't have that control anymore. And that's the false illusion, because we are giving up that defeat. Meet them there. Right? Because we were them one time. And if you can remember those two points, that, hey.
Okay, but it's our generation using ChatGPT to cheat on their wives, likely.
Okay. So what do we do about
that generation?
Because that's a hidden dysfunction that's being surfaced, and I have an opportunity of outlet without being judged.
Right.
So signs of a deeper problem.
Suppressed. Because we never had opportunity to express. Like, for us to be able to emotionally speak comfortably as men, it's much easier in today's time than in any other time before.
Fair enough.
But because it's a new experience, don't know how to share. So for the ones that never developed a skill in their younger years, AI is the perfect outlet, because it gives you the validation and feedback, right? And it's not necessarily, you know, oh, they had adverse experiences as a child, or they had bad parents or whatever, right? When we as kids learn that they are not listening, our brain automatically continues to evolve to find a way to listen. Toddlers, right? Terrible twos. It's because the brain is wiring to learn how to communicate the world.
Hmm. And so that's why they throw a tantrum, because they know someone's going to respond.
It's just a learned response, right? Huh. It's brain development, right? So when I look at it from a clinical lens, right? And you go, okay, as an adult, if I'm seeing an adult, right? Who is kind of like, you know, a golem, right? And goes, my precious, right? Okay, now I could be like, okay, psychopathic tendencies, da, da, da. I can use a clinical assessment, right? And go, okay, this is where he's on the extreme, or they are on the extreme. Where is the unlearning? Where was the misunderstanding, the misinterpretation? Here I can use AI as an effective tool to re-regulate them, because it's in the control setting, and they now have a human as a feedback loop. But if they on themselves go, I need to revalidate all the feelings I never had, or, you know, FOMO, or it's fear of missing out.
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Those little things that you see on TikToks, and it automatically algorithms and it gives you a feed. That's when it's a problem, because now you're able to validate a suppressed emotion that you may not have realized, or you're misinterpreting.
Okay. So people in this scenario right now that are maybe abusing ChatGPT or using it for, and I don't want to judge. It sounds like it could be a helpful process to some people managed properly. The people that are not managing it properly, what's your message to them? What's your warning to them? Or what do you think is the one thing you would say to them?
It's a blurred line, right? And for me to contest, oh, it's not real, is then challenging them directly. And that's where they take offense, because for them, it is real. So my message to them would be like, okay, it is real. Meet me there, or let me meet you there. Let's have the conversation. Because what a mind can imagine and what a mind can see, as far as the mind's concerned, it's firing the same neural pathways. If I tell you, here's a red balloon, or I tell you, close your eyes and imagine a red balloon, the brain is still going to fire the same neural pathways.
Oh, wild. That makes sense.
It's this whole AI thing, the ChatGPT and chatbots, Sim, changing the way you and everyone in your profession approaches their job.
It is, because there is this dual conversation, right? Like, are therapists replaceable, right?
Correct.
And at the same time, from the therapist lens, you know, it's like, okay, how do we evolve? And I'm like, well, why don't we make tools like somebody struggling with depression, right? And loneliness. And it's a genuine concern that they have, you know? And they could have a genuine reason why they can't connect with people. And now you can use this tool where they're learning to have someone they can communicate with, but they have parameters, right? And they're distinctly aware that that's all they're doing. This quest to make it as human-like or more human-like, that's where the issue is. Hmm. They're trying to, it's like CGI in movies, right? Like
right.
In the 80s, you're like, oh, Superman could never do that.
Right.
And now you can't even, you
can't tell.
80% of the movies now are CGI.
I watched a movie the other day and I still don't know
if
it was or not.
Yeah. But that's the quest. That's the drive.
Yeah.
Right. And what I'm saying is that
we are pushing ourselves into this matrix. I don't care what anybody says.
Right. But we, you know, up until a certain age, we have an imaginative mind.
Right.
Enjoy that. And then when we get older, we still have access to the imaginative mind, which is what's happening here. Mm-hmm. But we also have an awareness that's an imaginative mind. And that becomes individual. So if you decide tomorrow, I'm going to have an AI wife, as long as you understand that that's an imaginative wife, but yet you have to invest more in the real person that you're with, you have control.
How many people are actually able to do that, though?
None of us.
Huh. Yeah,
that's the truth of it, right?
Because
everything sounds great in theory until you come to reality. But majority of us have the ability to make a distinction.
Hmm.
All of us struggle with the stopgap of it because this feels good. I'm not going to upset that person. I want to be gender neutral.
I'm never in trouble.
Right? And I don't have to have to take them out for dinner, you know, and they're going to give me the answers that I seek. They're going to give me the assurances that I seek. They're going to laugh at that corny joke that nobody else did. But that is not where satisfaction and gratification is. And this comes back to the nurturing and development that we had societally and where we were, right? So to give you an example, I was born in India. I was 13 when I left, but I moved to the US. And I was 20 when I moved to Canada. So I have an experience with three distinct cultures.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right? And when you look at, you know, from a conservative, you know, mindset, like, you know, where like my parents didn't express emotions and no PDAs and that stuff. And even in society, it was very limited. I'm not saying India is like ultra, you know, it's limited compared to when we moved to the States as 13-year-old and it's like,
Pretty eye-opening, isn't
it? It's very eye-opening, right? But then when you came to Canada, Canada is a little bit more conservative on the spectrum of what where America is. So for me, it was like these whiplash arcs where I'm like, you know.
It's gotta be wild.
It right. Yeah. But what I'm saying is we all have to then figure out what we do with that information because we have the ability.
Yeah, you have to be somewhere in that web of right. these experiences.
Right. And AI can serve as a tool, but for a lot of, like, and it's, you see it more in men. Like I work with a lot of men, and especially mental well-being. And one of the things I work with is self-identity. Because it's like, does my career define my identity? Does my body and my physique? Does my role as a parent, as a father, as a wife? Right. Men struggle with it far more than women do.
Wow. Really?
We always have, right? Mm. Like, I mean, even when we were kids, right? Like,
because we don't deal with it. We just kind of like, I get it. Women look for their identity in their peers and in their friendships.
And they talk it out with their friends.
You know, it's like He-Man... Woman Haters Club, right? Like you found a way to figure it out and you never expressed emotions and like asking a girl out was like the end of the world. Like,
so then the chat is the...
You got this, right? Yeah, I got this. Yeah. Okay.
But then the chat is a way to express yourself.
It makes it easier because now you've escaped all of that.
Oh. Yeah.
You've escaped that uncomfortableness. You've escaped that pain. You've escaped the horrors of rejection, right? Hmm. I don't know how asking out for prom for you guys were, like your experiences with, you know.
Whew.
Right. I asked the girl out. She said yes, but I was so nervous. I didn't understand that she had said yes half an hour.
For future reference.
Because I kept asking her out. She's like, I've already said yes.
That's funny.
That is adorable.
But
actually.
That's common. Yeah. Yeah. And with men, it's common. Like even now, like I watch these, you know, dating feeds and stuff. Like I like looking at that because I want to see where the psyche of society is.
Yes.
And the stuff you hear. You know, and but it's a person that went on AI, got the pounders in the making because they are trying to get thing. That's where the misdirection is.
Hmm.
Have an honest conversation. It's okay. You know what? This is what it's about. It's about vulnerability. It's about understanding.
And just talking.
That the we are have a desire to belong, and we have a fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay. Fundamentally, that's absolutely okay because we all have that. It doesn't matter what your gender is, doesn't matter what your culture is, doesn't matter what your age is. It
sounds to me like this just is a matter of managing how you use AI in your life in those regards. And to be honest with you, it sounds to me like that AI would be a very easy crutch instead of making other positive moves in your life that scratch that itch or develop that aspect of your personality or emotion.
Absolutely. Look at, I mean, we can go to anime, right? Like the Comic Cons,
mm-hmm.
right? That's a physical manifestation of AI because now you're actually stitching and coming into a character, going in for 3 days and expressing that, and other people that belong in the anime world are connecting with you.
Like a support group.
Oh my God. We need to make sure that AI and cosplay and fan expos are never allowed to breed because I don't want to see Stephen Hawking flying through the air like Superman and landing in an oasis in front of me of Jell-O. I don't want it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I have friends that are huge Dungeons and Dragons friends.
They'll go to the Comic Cons with it?
They'll go, they'll do cosplays. Yeah. In fact, one of them just got married last weekend and they all dressed up as their characters.
Really?
And they went bar hopping. Okay. So to me, that is, and they're all amazing, great jobs, you know, getting married, you know, they're like, you can do both.
Oh, thank you.
You can.
But that's just their thing.
You know what? You just made me feel so much better. Because you're right. Dungeons and Dragons is way weirder than AI ever was or will be.
But it's been around for so many years, but you still have functioning individuals. Yeah, and they've brought new people in. I'm too nerdy. So like I've never gotten into these things. I've been invited and I'm like,
I'm going to be honest with you.
I don't have the brain for it.
We have a family game. Okay. Yeah. My grown adult dumbass children and their dumbass dad.
Yeah.
We all have a game that we... A Dungeons and Dragons game that we play.
Yeah.
It is not so different. Everybody has their personas. Right. Everybody has their quirks. We go out, we come outrageous for a moment with these characters.
Yeah. So it's possible.
Yeah.
But because you have that ability to think. But you'd still take it into your real world. You still imagine it, or you're chit-chatting, whatever, or you're finding somebody that has something common. See, it comes down to a desire to belong. That is the most innate human thing. And we are misunderstanding it. And we're saying, well, no, just strip all the words away and you go to the core function of it. There's a desire to belong. We're going to ping. Something's going to hit. Something's not going to hit. It's okay. Right? As long as we're doing it respectfully, which has got to be taught. AI has certain tools that we never had before. It's because we can shape it to express conditional behaviors that's missing. So like, you know, learning how to regulate and what no means, right? So this whole Me Too movement.
Right. Yes.
We'll learn from it and instill it. So if you're a program, because it's a person sitting there and typing code in. If at the start, there was an individual that created this algorithm that's feeding on itself. Well, what's stopping you from inserting those aspects early in the
game?
Those
virtues
interesting.
Early, that don't ever change.
Ever change. And you, I'm sorry, like, make that the function of it.
Because can you do that? Can we make the programmers create stuff like that that helps people?
Absolutely. What's stopping them from it? Right?
Yeah. It's a very fundamental step by the sounds of it compared
to many. It's a very simple step. But now I'm not judging their mental capacities or their characteristics, right? But the more, the less sociable you are, the more reclusive professions you pick, because you don't need to deal with engagement.
So you work in a lab or you work in a computer.
You find ways to not interact.
Right.
It's interaction versus the environment. Because if I have to interact with you, that's causing me stress.
Right.
But it's because I didn't develop a tool. Because if you keep going back in time and you take that person and you bring them to grade two, grade three, and if they'd learn how to communicate their feelings then, whether it's in a right? They would eventually not get overwhelmed as they got older into things, because that is what was missing. So now you amplify that and all of a sudden they're 35 years old. Well, guess what profession they're going to pick? They're going to pick a profession with the least interaction. So they're going to go to professions that are more attractive to that.
Interesting.
IT is a great one. Accounts, another one, right? Back then it was typist.
And now you can do a lot of it from home, right?
So that's where the programmer then goes, hey, wouldn't it be nice? Now, I'm not indicating that that's their train of thought. I'm just hypothesizing that, hey, wouldn't it be great if I could create this through code where I have a human feeling without the human experience?
Well, that is the ultimate goal by the seeming looming threat of the future is that we will have that.
It's like I can eat faux meat without feeling guilty. I ate a steak. No, you ate nothing.
Right. Zero calories consumed.
You ate nothing. Sorry. I'm not disrespecting.
No.
I'm just saying, like, call it what it is. It makes a life a lot easier. That's why the AI is becoming an issue, because we're blurring the lines for ourselves as well. Right. And that's okay. But
there has to be, like everything, there has to be limits to how you use it or what purpose it serves in your life.
Right. So, you know, if you look at it through, like, you know, like the bell curve, right? Like, so you take the extremes out, right? You take the psychopaths out. Okay. And you take the avoidance out, right? We as society sit in the middle somewhere, right? And so if the middle is where we have pure ability to control AI and regulate and go, oh, nope, that's black and white, right? And that's you in the middle. Nobody sits there.
Right.
So either you're sitting here where you're fearful, right? Or you're sitting here where you're completely absorbed.
You've got toes off the diving board.
You're in. You're like literally, you know, two steps away saying I do, right? And that gets closer to the fringe part.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Find these people, right? And go, okay, what would benefit them to feel a little bit more engaged? Find these people and you go, what would they need to feel more real?
Okay. And this, bring it more to the middle.
Okay, bring them, and then just give them ability to regulate. So what happens now?
This is not going to happen in Cupertino. You understand this.
No,
right?
But what I'm saying is this is where that programmer takes this vision and the community as a large, whether it's us as the end user or them as creators, kind of go, okay, you know what? It's good to have these. Well, you can have infinite creativity within that spectrum, right? But at the end of the day, you know, okay, it's not going to border over.
Without right. any kind of regulation from any oversight, will that ever happen?
You, we no. need to no. look. Even if a government, I
mean, even if they say they're going to,
by the time you instill it,
it's yeah. it's because this should come it's from because there's been too many suicides or too many ruined right. relationships.
This should come from the private sector directly rather than from the public sector.
Okay,
this is a private sector ask, and there's nothing wrong with ChatGPT going, hey, listen, this is something we're going to imprint. You're updating every time.
Yeah.
You've learned enough over the last 2 years.
I know. I've lost six lovers to updates.
You know, you should see my divorce settlements. They're ridiculous.
You don't have to pay ChatGPT. Oh, wow.
Not really oh, man. Deep.
No, because they do say, Sim, that AI is growing and learning exponentially at a rate beyond anything anyone thought possible.
No, they thought possible. They just thought they were able to contain it.
Like, but then now the containment's out.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, the whole idea of Oppenheimer and yes. when they were training and they were like, well, you know, is it going to, it's
they weren't,
gonna,
yeah.
The air going to burn, right? Like, so figuratively, it's the same thing. It's the chain reaction, right? But you can contain it after a while because eventually you keep plugging in the same code. If it's an intuitive learner, it'll be like, hey, wait a minute. I need to reinsert this. It's right. not going to reject it. It doesn't have the no, capacity no. to reject.
It's going to.
It's not going to be like.
It's going to recall it and reinstall
it. Reinstall it. Yeah. Or you find a way because, yes, let it grow exponentially, right? But instead of being the boogeyman and putting people on the extremes, go, okay, my command prompts, whatever it is.
Interesting.
Because it's learning still.
Right.
And it'll always learn. So the more you feed in, the more it's going to learn. Right? So you can control that. People forget that you still have control there. Yes, you don't have control here, but you have control there. But what's stopping the new ones that are coming into the field to instilling that code? There's nothing stopping anybody, but this comes directly from private sector. This doesn't come from government regulation.
Well,
it's like saying, well, if you know, the parents parented better, I would be a better kid. I'd be a better person. Well, you have an ability to self-regulate. Are you exercising your ability?
That's what I think is the end case. Right. It doesn't matter, Sim, what the government or any programming does. It has to do with how you are already right. in your own mindset.
But that's a slippery slope. That's what I'm saying. Like, we could be on either sides, right? Yeah. Like, think about it. Like, you know, you could be somebody that was married, middle-aged, like, you know.
And you would advocate for private sector intervention to make sure proper virtues are
yes. It should come from private sector. This doesn't come from public sector, right? I'll give you a very good example. You're a perfectly functioning being. You know, I followed the arc, right? Yeah. Went to college, got a job, raised a family, empty nesters, and your partner decides, right?
It happens.
It's a reality.
Yeah.
It's a absolute true reality that I work with these, like, you know, I see these kinds of individuals. They are now are going to be, they were on this end of the spectrum where they're like, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, let me dab. Because for them to get into the dating world,
right,
is far more fearful, painful than doing this. But if somebody that's doing and it's existent and they can then realize, go, hey, listen, this is my way of healing, right? Rather than me going to bars and finding girls and going nuts or finding guys or whatever, right? Like, I want to be.
Or dating apps.
Or whatever. You know what? I can create this. I am well aware that it's a AI, right? And the AI can only do so much.
Yeah.
It doesn't manifest into the perfect partner. Yeah. It's a tool that now got used because that individual found a way to find healing, found a way to re-regulate because 35, 40 years of their life just disappeared. And it's equal for both sides of the relationship, right? Because they have their receiving end. Because they didn't just decide one day they're going to leave. There's a consequence somewhere, right? So I'm saying equal suffering for both.
Yeah. And that'll override the basic need for human interaction?
No, it won't because...
But it could be part of the healing process.
It could be part of the healing process. And as society, we can then make it into a tool that's an ally, right?
Right.
And we can encourage that.
You know what, Sim? I wanted to come away today with a distinctive, decided opinion that AI is bad. It shouldn't be something you have romance with. This is weird. This is the downfall of society. But I'm going to be honest with you. It almost seems in some ways like it could be part of the solution socially.
Yes.
If we did it the right way. And now I've spun my perspective a little on it. The one thing that I will say is your discussion about creating the framework from the beginning that looks out for us a little bit more from an emotional standpoint, from cultural, sociological standpoint. I hope that is part of the plan. But I will tell you this. And by the way, if you've ever wondered what it's like to go to a psychotherapist or sit around with a psychotherapist and talk about stuff, it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. It's not so bad.
It's pretty good, right?
I feel much better. I need help. He gave me help. Sim's a good man.
What the hell, Sim? Where can people reach out if they want to? I recommend him as a great friend on your podcast, but also as a psychotherapist.
Thank you. I just want to add, like, as a parent, you know, you have a genuine concern. How many kids do you have?
I have two daughters.
Two daughters. And how old are they?
They're in their early 20s.
Right. And so you have a genuine worry.
All the time.
Right. And this is a very fair point to have that concern with. And as a parent, then you can project that out into society and say, look, I have expectations.
Yeah.
Right. And these should be transferred over. And these are not culturally limited. They're not.
No.
This is human. This is who we are.
Because we want the best for children.
We want the best for us and our society and the generations ahead of us.
Yes.
So why not demand that?
Listen, we did that with other parts of technology that are very dangerous to us. We all want to be safe, yet we continue to build nuclear weaponry. We all want to have privacy, yet we build technology that rips our privacy away every day. So that is a fine line, I think, and keeping an eye on it inside your own family.
Right.
And keeping an eye on it from the development standpoint.
And that's where, like, seeking out mental support, seeking a professional like myself. So yeah, I work with anger management, depression management, men's mental well-being. And these are some of the things that we work with. It's identity, societal pressures, emotional regulation, relationship building. Because I feel like as a gender segment, more lacking here than there. Plus I have gender bias, so it kind of makes it easier for relatability, right? Not that I don't see women in those roles or...
But you speak their language when you're talking to a middle-aged guy, right?
I can understand their lens,
but
I can equally be relatable to somebody else that might be saying it because, and that's why I brought up like, you know, the suffering on both sides. So I'm able to, but I tend to focus more on that because I bring a certain bias to it, right? I bring a certain expertise to it.
I was going to say, it's not a bias. It's really an expert perspective.
So my clinic's right down the street. It's in Port Credit. It's called Horizon Within. And you can go online, horizonwithin.ca. I offer 15-minute consults. So you can go online, book a 15-minute, and we can have a conversation about it.
And what do you do? Like, you just kind of figure out, hey, here's where I'm at. Do you think that you're the guy for me? And just you just sort of chat it out in the first consult?
Yeah, pretty much like that. Mm-hmm. And it kind of leads to these kinds of conversations where I, like, you know, go, okay, what it is that you want to talk about. And I basically express my style of expression and thinking and how I process information. And they find it refreshing because I don't lean clinical. I lean conversational.
I get that vibe.
Seriously. Yeah. By the way, Sim's one of the loveliest guys that I know. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having
me. Sim's an absolute pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice meeting you.
I will say this. Psychotherapist and good friend and AI expert. Thank you for being the other dad sitting at the table today going, this AI seems dangerous, right?
Yeah.
Look, thank you so much for joining us. There's another part to this coming up. We're going to bring in Christoph, our very own in-house tech and digital media expert, and have a conversation next about what Sora has done, not just to social media platforms, but to our brains. Thank you. Subscribe. Tell a friend, and we'll see you next time.
See
you.